Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
And our two sidekicks, Justin Robert Young and Brian Brushwood.
Hey!
I'm glad you guys could join the show. I know you've been busy out there promoting your new comedy album.
That's a mere sidekick to the brand new Andrew Main book, Murder Theory, the latest in the Theo Cray series. Andrew, when is that coming out?
We got another week or so. So let's promote your project, guys. Enough about me.
I just wanted to point out that Murder Theory from the Naturalist series is coming out
February 5th.
So everybody know that.
Did I tell you that one of my favorite things was hearing my wife use your name as an adjective? Like, she was describing the story she was like, I mean, I don't want to get all Andrew Main about it. And the words Andrew Main mean a certain set of things to me. So I'm imagining, like, you know, creative, starting billions of projects, all this stuff. But
that doesn't sound good. She didn't want to go to that Main place.
Well, then instead it was like, I don't want to get all Andrew Main about it, or maybe she said, I got this really Andrew Main vibe. And then the next sentence made it clear that in her mind, she was using the word Andrew Main to mean a awesome, creepy thriller. It was great.
A
it was
creepy,
great.
Creepy thought. I had a really creepy thought. Well, like, cool. I'll work with that.
Specifically, like, I mean, we already do that with Stephen King. In fact, Stephen King really enjoyed when he was writing under the name Richard Bachman. There's like this whole scene where he's like, well, I don't want to get all Stephen King about it, you know. But that moment.
You know, literary great Stephen King. I wish he could write more books, but the publishers won't let him.
Regardless, I thought it was awesome to hear your name used as a shorthand adjective.
You know, and that is a thing we've talked about before, about how your style or who you are kind of happens when you're not really paying attention. It's just when you're just sort of focused on doing things. And, you know, I remember first I'm like, oh, kind of an Andrew Main like book or whatever. I'm like, I'm sure I have habits and things that I do, but I'm unaware of so many of them, you know, and like, you know, your guys' style of comedy and stuff, which I understand there's a comedy album coming out, right? Right.
Yeah, All's Well and Night Attack album. If you're in Australia, buy it right now. It's available right now if you're in Australia. If you're not, you got to wait until tomorrow, January 22nd. But I guess Japan, too. Make us big in Japan, baby!
Yeah. So we love it when people send us questions or you can even be hate mail. It's attention. We feed off of that. That's fine.
Maybe not tomorrow. But
yeah, weird. Bit off script on that one. That's fine. Go ahead.
Oh, what's going on there? You got my letter, I see, Brian. we'll talk it over. And I got a threatening note, by the way, with my Houdini box that somebody said they know where I live.
Well, they should. They mailed you a box. They mailed you a package.
Wait, was it from Jacob or David?
I don't know. All I know is we know where you live. I'm like, do you do this for everybody?
did you solve the Houdini box?
Oh, Brian, I've been writing a book.
Okay, all right.
I'm not smart enough to solve these things, by the way. I don't even get into that. I hate puzzles. I like physical, simple ones that don't have, like, ciphers and stuff. Anything else makes me angry. All right, let's go to an email that was sent to us. This is from Vlad. Greetings, intrepid adventurers. In recent years, my network of people and skills has expanded beyond the North American continent, and I find myself dealing with companies in the Far East more and more, specifically Singapore and Malaysia. My usual techniques of networking don't really work over the internet since I make myself stand out with entertaining anecdotes and general good energy as I work my way around a room, shaking hands and such. I found that people will remember the big smile and hearty belly laugh they had at a joke and will subsequently be more likely to remember the quick sales pitch that went along with it. This method has been great for me locally, but since flying to Singapore just isn't in the cards quite yet, I need to find another method. I usually get about a dozen inquiries over the course of a year from overseas companies, and those maybe five are reputable enough to do business with. My biggest hangup, aside from knowing what my own services are worth, is how to grow my influence in that area of the world. I can figure I can savvy way of saying, tell all your friends how cool I am to work with. I'd be happy to work at a small discount. I figure I'd be in good shape. Any and all feedback is appreciated, and I'm available for clarifications or further detail through this email address. Love the show. Can't wait to hear more about the goblins.
Oh,
what yours in foam, Vladimir Nico.
What a fascinating letter, because I'm left having no idea what this person does, and which causes me to wonder how much it matters for me to know what he does. Like, he's speaking to a kind of a fundamental truth, right? Do we know anything about him?
I know that he works, does like modifies like Nerf guns and stuff and makes replicas and stuff for things like that. I think so. The challenge, I guess, that I would say is, like, for me, I'm going, is this, are you talking about for a hobby that will always not really make you much money, or something that could make you money or whatever? Because, and that's, let's assume that's a business. Let's assume that's a business, some kind involving toys or things or replicas or whatever. I have no idea, but let's assume something like that.
If I was going to guess, it sounds an awful lot like what our friend Bill Duran does with Punished Props. You know, some kind of, he taught us how to modify and make Nerf weapons into awesome blasters or whatever. I know that the cosplay community is exploding. I know that people will oftentimes hire people to create custom costumes so that they can cosplay and be the, you know, the awesomest person at various events. So I right now I'm just totally unfairly projecting all that onto this, in which case he's saying that he's getting a lot of interest from a place where he's not able to rely on his natural gifts. In other words, it sounds to me like he's good in the room. Now he's got interest in a place where he can't be in the room, and he is feeling hamstrung by not being able to rely on the stuff that has worked before.
Yeah, although I do feel like this is kind of incomplete, in that I have no idea where, if this is a mod by mod thing where he's just looking for more referrals, then the work is the best thing that he can do. You know, and then cons where people are using his stuff or something like that. Like, that's really how, you know, Bill continued to build his influence, not only by the fact that he had a great YouTube game, right, but also that when he went to big conventions, people knew him, you know, and at the point where he got too busy for commissions, he could still rely on the fact that, like, people were using his stuff. Like, it was out there. And that's what continues to propel him forward. I'm not sure. Like, I mean, this seems like far more of a salesperson's problem, right? That, like, I want to sell my widget, or I want to get a good supplier. I found more of that is possible in these other countries. But how do I do that remotely?
So I'm going to say, hey, let's rewrite the ground rules here. He says, yeah, a trip to Singapore is not in the cards. If that's the best thing that could happen, that could be done. One, I mean, let's figure out alternatives too, but I'm like, how would you figure out how to do that? Let's say, like, if, you know, Singapore can be expensive to go there and to go do that, but it's like, okay, how do you make this doable? And I think that often we know face-to-face is the best. Face-to-face, so much of the relationships that you and Justin and Brian have with other podcasters, other people, has been showing up and meeting people. A lot of it's people watching stuff, but showing up and meeting gets you into doors. Shaking hands, doing those things you said does that. So if your business is selling, let's say, mod Nerf guns or something like that, and you know there's people over there, I would try to figure out, like, hey, I would send a little, you know, put a little thing out there and either say, hey, I want to go to Singapore and I want to go to Malaysia and I want to go talk about this, maybe do a workshop or do something like this. Who can help me out? Who has a couch I can stay on? You know, in magic, you know, we have this wonderful network of magicians around the world. If I say, oh, I'm going to be in Shanghai in 2 weeks, I'm going to find somebody that, even without having done what I've done, even if I'm a guy who's just created some stuff and people like, there'll be people that want to host me. There are people going to want to take me out to dinner. There are people going to offer, you know, their houses because they want to share in this.
Yeah, I like the idea of hosting workshops. We've certainly seen versions of that work for friends of ours. When he was running the balloon business, my friend Gus Davis, you know, he wanted to connect with, he took over a company called T. Myers Magic. And that was one of the top distributors of twisty balloons, right? And had a patent on one of the inflators that most people used. And he was like, okay, I'm the new guy. I need to reconnect with my purchasing audience. So he put together a 20 or 30 stop tour where he just went across the country and they I think he called it TJM. And the goal was, let's, in this town, who are the people at the top of their game in the balloon twisting business? How, let's get together. Let's have lectures. Let's learn techniques. Let's talk about business. And also, you know, not only was he gathering information the entire time, but also he was learning about them, and they were learning about, you know, T. Myers Magic. Something like that could totally happen, even if it was just a one-off. Again, I just wish we knew more about what this guy did. If there was a performance aspect to it, or if there was value in harvesting the mind share of whatever companies he's dealing with in the Far East.
Yeah. Look. If this is something that is involved with like mods or creations, the biggest thing that you can ever do is pictures. You know, pro pictures are huge. They are something where, you know, you can really, really, really take advantage of the fact that, you know, they're universal. You don't have to worry about it being a language barrier issue. And that's what will continue to drive business and figuring out where to post, how to post. You know, if you're trying to get over into these other markets and you think that they're really good for you, then, you know, I would say make that a goal. Make it a goal to get out there. And everybody's suggestions to do it, I think, have been valid.
Yeah, I do think, just looking at some context clues, that he does do Nerf mods. And I think that is a big part of Vlad's business, is making and doing like a... We've seen a video of him doing some screen printing, or not screen printing, but printing on plastic.
So I would say if this is the space you're playing in, the great thing about doing video stuff is that you can get them captioned, and then you could get them translated.
Yes.
With translated captions very, very affordably. That's something that we're trying to get better about on both the Scam Nation and on the Modern Rogue channel. Captioning is getting increasingly cheap, and translations is getting increasingly cheap. And you have the opportunity to take, you know, whatever language you're speaking, to suddenly reach out to, you know, 80% more of the world. And that's a really good opportunity for to build fans for the very, you know, even though you don't even speak the same language.
Yeah, I think. All of that, all of the above is a great way. But I am going to say that, like, I wish I'd been more bold when I was younger.
So my first get, like, you know, if you said, hey, if I'm going to go do a workshop over there for, if you know, if I can get $20 a head, I can buy a plane ticket, it'll help me do this. Worth the effort. If I really wanted to go travel somewhere with magic, it's what I would do. You know, there are people who say, oh, you got to go through these people to book it, which I didn't do that. Or it's like, I'm going to do it on my own. Now, alternatives, like you talked about, like doing the YouTube channels and stuff, you know, in a lot of like Singapore, especially, like a good part of your audience is going to speak English, you know, and yeah. Think about live streaming their hours, you know, think about live streaming when, you know, because it's like, you know, very, you know, it's like you opposite side of the world, but think about going in there and say, oh, I'm going to do a live stream and talk to some people from Singapore, focusing on that and building up an audience by just interacting with them live.
Yes, the national language of Singapore is English. So the vast majority of people do speak English there. And look, they're also, I've found anybody when I used to cover people, magicians in Singapore, they were very, very responsive. They love being, you know, connected outside of their part of the country, or part of the world, rather.
So just a thought. Like, yes. And again, like my point about doing time shifted live streaming, different audience, different thing. And you will all of a sudden realize there's an entirely different group of people up at 3 a.m. because 3 a.m. here is 3 p.m. somewhere else.
Yeah. It's pretty funny because, you know, they're rolling out new beta versions of the analytics tools on YouTube. And in this case, like it grabs the top five videos that are performing on your channel. And one of those is Aiko Uwais and Sam Locke teaching us how to do combat stuff from the movie Mile 22. And of course, they're legends in Indonesia. And so you look at the real time past 48 hours and all of them follow this same curve, except for one video is exactly the opposite direction where the other four ebb. This is where that one flows.
We used to, on our iTrix site, we used to do a pop open, like a one of these live chat thing where people could pop in there, and we'd get kids from Indonesia,
yeah,
who didn't speak English, who would just sit there with their decks of cards watching, participating and stuff, because it was a bunch of other people talking about magic and they wanted to be, you know, part of that. And we liked it. It was fun because it was like, you know, I remember one kid who showed up a lot who would be there sitting on the floor with his decks of cards and watching. It's not a word of English that we knew, but he was a regular because when he could see tricks and stuff like this, it was cool. And then he'd show us stuff and it was fun. And
this is when you were doing the Tiny Chat, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that stuff, like, I think that in the case of NECA, like, I think if you, YouTube videos are good, but if you're this, you know, you're this much of a people person, live streaming, I think, would be great, you know, would be a great thing. And it's not the same numbers as YouTube. Live stream is 6 people at a time or 12 people at a time, but that can have the same, it have almost the same effect as being there in person. You know, I prefer when I have a launch to a book, like, I don't know, Murder Theory, you know, my preferred route now is I go on my Twitter and I just Periscope nonstop. I reach far more people than I ever did when I did regular, you know, publishing tours.
And it's also a lot better at calls to action. If it's like, do this now. Everybody's doing this now. Just go ahead. It's so simple. If you send me a thing and now I'm like reading, hey, thank you for this person who sent this in. Now all of a sudden there's social proof that this is not just a thing in the ether.
Yep. Yep. 100%. Picks.
You know what? This is a weird pick for me to give because it is outside of my area of expertise, but I suppose that is the reason that we read books, is so that we could become informed. Somebody recently, you know, we're at a weird part where for the very first time, all of the media things that I do are finally under one umbrella. The Mono Rogue, Scam Nation, all the podcasts or whatever, two of the three podcasts I do, you know, started under another network and we had to reboot as independent or whatever. And a number of people have said, hey, well, have you looked for an angel investor, as you know, because we're obviously getting ready to try to do some daring stuff by building out the 7 acres and building a production studio and expanding the lineup and taking on, you know, new projects. And all of a sudden I realize how little I've never had the opportunity to think of anything I was up to as anything but, you know, Brian Brushwood just running as fast as he can. But as we increasingly are building other things, we increasingly kind of start to look like a startup media company. And it turns out that there are people who want to invest money in those. And all of a sudden, nobody said anything along those lines, but I don't want to sound totally stupid when somebody does come along. So I'm looking to better myself. So I'm currently reading Venture Deals, 3rd edition on Audible from Brad Feld and Jason Mendelsohn. Just basically like, what do people expect when they do an angel investment? What do people expect when, in terms of a payoff and a valuation and all that stuff? And even if this goes nowhere, it seems like I would be smarter for having learned it than not. So that's what I'm working on right now.
I believe I read that. And I think it was a lot of good advice as far as like counterintuitive, you know, as far as, you know, guys who went through it and could tell you more about you know, yeah, I have the older, like the version from like 7 years ago, and it looks like they substantially updated it. Yeah, I mean, that's good. I'd be curious to hear some more of your thinking and thoughts on all of that too, though.
Well, specifically what's happened is, and we've talked about this on After Things, where it's like in the beginning, you know, you come up with a stage show and you figure out, or I came up with a stage show, and then it's like, okay, what is the max number of people I can reach on a street corner? Okay, well, if we scale up, then I can reach this many people at colleges. If I scale up even more, I could reach maybe 100,000 people over the run of Halloween Horror Nights at Universal. And then at that point, to go any bigger, you kind of have to move into media. And so lacking, you know, we launched Scam School at the right time to scale that up. And then it's like, okay, well, if you want to reach more people, you're going to have to come up with more properties. And so, you know, out of that came Hacking the System and the Modern Rogue and all that stuff. And now we're finally at a place where we want to, the next phase for me is to reach more people, is to figure out content creation engines that are bigger than the name Brian Brushwood. And mm-hmm. once that happens, if we build those engines, it seems like people with deeper pockets and more experience than me might come along. And again, I just don't want to be caught unawares when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely. I think that, you know, that reading all those things is absolutely helpful. The thing that I would say to think about though, is that if you know, ultimately they want to invest in a thing that makes money. They want to invest in a path to make money. And that's what you're building, is you're building this pathway to making money. And they say, this is how we're going to make more money. You know, by doing X, we get more money. And the thing I would tell you to think seriously about is, do I want to give that up to somebody else? Because it's what you're doing. If you have another way to raise said money, another way to get that funding without giving up a piece of what you're doing, because once you do that, you know, You've been around enough people who've been in there. On one hand, it's exciting, it's gratifying that somebody just says, hey, we put $5 million into this. And it's like, yes, but that's when it starts. You know, that's when it starts, and it's a whole new level, because now I have to keep these people happy and I have to build this thing. And, you know, it's a thing just to think a lot about, you know, the pro and the con.
Yeah, and I guess that's the good news is that I'm informing myself now, because there is no opportunities, so that when there is an opportunity, I will be informed on how these things tend to go.
Well, I mean, the opportunity is there if you want it. I mean, you draw a circle around what you're doing. You lay out a business plan, or depending upon, you know, who you're reading, if you should have a formal plan or not, whatever. You can make these things happen. But also understand too, is you just my concern would be is that if the idea comes into your head the first time somebody comes up to you, that may sound attractive, but then the reality is that there might be 50 more attractive opportunities if you're going to pursue that, you know?
Right.
You know, so yeah, but anyhow, I'm excited.
Excited for the nothing that that might be a thing in 5 years.
Excited that Brian's reading a book.
Well, I mean, I've gone through this with like, oh, and my own small scale stuff, where first I'm like, I'll have something, then, you know, I've had people said, oh, we like the way you do stuff, we'd be willing to put stuff in, you know, some help fund or angel something, and I'm like, oh, it sounds cool. And then when I get to the point where I'm like, I can totally self-finance this, why would I let anybody come in and do this now? You know, and then it's like, oh, I see, like, oh man, I see both, you know, both sides.
And that is the weird part, right? Is because we are self-financing everything, and in the short term, there are tangible benefits to consolidating all of us working in the same place, and it makes sense for us to have a property and all this stuff. But at some point, it's not unreasonable for me to guess that in the next 5 years, there may be some other idea that does scale and that would attract that stuff. And so that's why I need to start filling my head with these core understandings now, not for anything that I have in my mind today, but it's for the thing that I don't yet know what will pop into my mind that I want to be ready.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Other picks, anybody?
Yeah, my pick is spoiler alert, involves 1960 election. Double Cross, written by Sam Giancana, but the nephew of the Sam Giancana that the book's about, and Chuck Giancana, the brother of Chicago mob boss Sam Giancana. It's a book about mob stories. And man, I'll tell you, these mob stories, they're so crazy, you know, you won't believe them. And it probably is smart for you to not believe them because, man, to read this book, Sam Giancana was the most important person in America, pulling literally everybody's strings from the CIA to the president on down, which seems odd for somebody that wound up in exile for 10 years and then dead in his kitchen.
Oof.
You know, it's not unknown that people don't recognize the reach and power and, you know, the influence that some of these people have, and they have to point it out to us. I'm reminded of, like, man, I don't want to get too much into it, but, like, I knew a guy that got involved with somebody who was South Florida, this guy who was had made a movie about his life, and he was kind of, like, peripherally involved in the mob, but he was basically like a cat burglar guy or whatever, but he was a bit mobbed up. And he had a movie made, and he watched this movie made, and it's this most glorification kind of, like, you know, he'd be, you know, a story of this kind of guy's life. And it was awkward. I got invited to a screening, and I'm watching this, and I knew that this guy was, you know, a mob-related guy. And paid for this thing to be made. It didn't go out anywhere, but this is weird sitting there watching this. This is a very interesting movie.
Look, Sam Giancana is an important figure in history, and I think that we would all be better to understand his life. However, there's definitely a solid page discussing his irresistible sexual chemistry and how he would make it a routine to sleep with his enemies' wives so they would tell him secrets, which I'll just say I don't exactly know if everything went down exactly the way that they that he describes. Yeah. But you know, look, it's written from the perspective largely of the brother, and the brothers, they came from a very screwed up family, which is fairly beyond dispute that their father was you know, a very violent man, and so I think he looked at him as a hero, as people often look at their older brothers. I just don't know if I would take every word that Sam Giancana said verbatim.
I have a quick pick. I watched this over the weekend because it was a new Netflix film. It's Io, the film. Mm-hmm. Io. I think this film is probably not for me, partially because, again, I don't think Netflix makes good trailers, and the trailer for this sells it as like a big action-y sort of road trip movie, when really it's more of a quieter, self-contained sort of drama. It's a sci-fi drama about a young woman living on Earth, which is you know, been ravaged by some sort of man-made destruction, and is trying to work on saving the Earth somehow, and finds out that there are only a few more days to take the last ship off of Earth to the wherever humanity is in the orbit of Io, while they're waiting for a new Earth to be found. And she meets a guy who's also on the way to the rocket ship, and it's very talky, it's very discussion heavy, and it's very relaxed with its pacing and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that I didn't like about it, but I do think if you're in a you know, very contemplative dramas, Io is you could find a worse way to spend 90 minutes than Io.
The ringing endorsement.
I know.
Like, watch that, they'll be like Io, and was it like Titan or whatever, you know, about,
right,
you know, getting ready to go to the planet Titan because we've ruined Earth kind of thing. And it's like,
is that what that was about?
Theme here? What if they're trying to send us a message? What do they know?
Well, and because I've never seen that movie, that I know what you're talking about, Titan. And the way that it's written on Netflix makes it sound like it's like a monster mutant story.
Are you thinking of the Europa Project?
No, pretty sure it's called Titan.
Okay.
But it's another thing of like Netflix selling stuff not exactly as it is. But I think there are some people who will really like Io for what it is.
Io. My pick is I watched a classic film, one that I think warrants maybe, you know, every 15 years or so going back and watching again. And, you know, you see some of the first performances of such actors as William H. Macy and Chaz Palminteri. Small roles, but still notable for the fact that they're very small roles for these guys. And they're the most famous people in the movie, although it's a movie many people remember. And it's a fun movie. I'm talking about The Last Dragon.
Oh, wow.
Show enough. So that's on, I think that's on Netflix right now. So if you've never seen The Last Dragon, it was a movie produced by Berry Gordy, the Motown producer, and it features the story of Bruce Leroy, who is a martial arts master and a, you know, quiet young man who is forced to, you know, protect the TV music host played by Vanity from the bad guy Eddie Arcadian, as well as fight off against Shonuff, who is the Shogun of Harlem. And it's a fun, cute movie. You've got like the first appearance of Ernie Reyes Jr., who'd go on to go do like the TV show Sidekicks and stuff. The guy who plays Shonuff, he was a bowler on Briscoe County Jr. And so it's a fun, quirky movie. And also what's interesting about it is it's very much a product of the 80s. And you can tell it was produced by, you know, a music producer, because in the middle of it, they played the DeBarge music video, Rhythm of the Night, and it was the debut of their song.
Oh, like really?
Yeah, you watch, like, you know, Vanity throws it to, like, now something's really hot now, you know, DeBarge, it's Rhythm, it's like Rhythm of the Night plays, like, almost in its entirety. which left me on, led me going on to something like, one of the things I never, like, maybe I knew, but I didn't really acknowledge, was DeBarge was the family. El DeBarge was the lead singer in that song. The other people there were the family members. And then you start reading about the whole tragic story of the DeBarge family. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, like, that's just a whole nother. That's a biopic waiting to happen. So two of the brothers, like, arrested for selling drugs, whatever, died. I mean, two died of, like, HIV. I mean, just a horrible sort of. You know, this extremely talented family dealing with all sorts of adversities and stuff. But anyhow, Last Dragon, gonna watch the video.
Ha!
Feel the rhythm of the night. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.